Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, July 4, 2017. Happy Independence Day, everybody in the United States. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw television show. Monday's WWE Raw was in Phoenix, Arizona at Talking Stick Resort Arena, the same venue will play host to Tuesday's SmackDown live show. You can join me for live coverage of SmackDown as the show airs. USA Network, of course, at 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time. If you're out and about watching fireworks, doing the family barbecue thing, however it is you spend your Independence Day, of course, we do have the mobile version of the site. You can keep tabs while I'm doing the live review. But you can also check in, of course, after the show. We'll keep you updated. Jake Barnett has family plans. He will be taking his daughter to the fireworks, and so I will be filling in for Jake on live coverage. Jake will end up handling the hit list duties on Wednesday, so we're just kind of flip-flopping roles this week, but it's going to be lonely. I'll hear fireworks going off in the distance. I'll hear my dog panting in the house, but I get done at 9 o'clock. I still have time to get out and go to the fireworks and actually have a family barbecue on Tuesday afternoon that I'm looking forward to as well, so don't feel bad for me. Raw, I thought, was a good go-home edition heading into the pay-per-view. Not a slam-dunk great edition, but I think really the build this month for the Great Balls of Fire show, since the last pay-per-view event, I think WWE has cranked it up a notch when it comes to the way they are building up these matches. It's been an ongoing criticism of mine, it seems like, not intentionally. It's just I joked last month in my written preview for the last pay-per-view. It's just like, here we go again, another pay-per-view where the lineup looks good on paper, but they didn't make you feel like it was anything special, and they have actually stepped up nicely. It feels like Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns is a big deal. It certainly feels like Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe is a big deal. I like the build that they've given to Enzo and Big Cass's first match and some other things along the way. So very encouraged to see Raw at least making their pay-per-view matches feel important, just doing a better job of setting those up on the television show. It was still a long three-hour show, so it wasn't like this was a truly memorable night or anything for WWE, but still, we'll work our way through this and kind of especially spend some time talking about those segments that they did an effective job of building things up. They actually opened up with one of them, but Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Booker T on commentary, JoJo was the ring announcer. Enzo Amore made his entrance, and a unique way to open the show, and he kind of, he recapped a lot of what he said, but I guess the message here essentially was that, the time for crying is over, and he's going at Cass. They will be meeting on Sunday, and he did take a jab at Cass, saying that he shouldn't be surprised when his next merchandise check reads zero dimes, unless he's wearing a t-shirt that reads Cass Hole. And that was kind of how he closed the first wave of the promo, because he dropped the mic at that point, but then he picked it up again and asked for his music to be called off, and said that he and Cass were brothers, and he said that part of him has died, but the big boot that touched his head was like CPR. He brought up Tupac. He was wearing a bandana like Tupac would wear, and he said, all eyes on me, and then he showed off some ink on his stomach, looked like magic marker maybe, that read New Life, and Cass was actually shown watching this promo on a backstage monitor, and Charlie Caruso approached him, asked him for comment, and he said he's never heard anyone talk for so long without saying anything, and he said Enzo won't be walking the walk on Sunday because he's not going to be walking at all, and that's when suddenly Enzo jumped Cass from behind and started throwing punches at him, and they had referees and producer Adam Pearce get involved quickly to pull them apart. Good segment, and Enzo, I just kind of gave you the quick version. It was a lengthy promo that he delivered, maybe a little bit long, but still, I thought it was a good promo. The thing I liked about this, where Enzo and Cass's shtick just kind of felt like, yeah, you might get a witty line or two in there that they kind of add to it. It just, you'd heard it all. You'd heard the body of it so many times that it just, they could probably say the thing in their sleep. Where this, Enzo's actually cutting promos now, not just going out there and, doing an entrance shtick. And I think he's doing a really nice job with this. I still question how he's going to do as a solo act. It seems like he has a lot to prove as far as the in-ring work is concerned. But, as far as the promos are concerned, I think this was a nice job. And I guess one of the things I like about him is that he doesn't feel polished, at least in this, in this setting, as far as like him delivering his own promos rather than entrance shtick. Now, obviously he did some promos at the same time when they were teaming together, but this just has a little bit of a different feel to it. And he's certainly getting more of an opportunity to have longer promos. And so again, even though this one felt like it went a little bit long, I kind of like that he's a little rough around the edges. It doesn't feel so scripted in most places. Maybe that end line about Cass Hole at the end, but it just kind of feels like he's out there speaking from the heart. And so, I mean, I'm sure he's being very heavily scripted, but at the same time, I think he comes off as genuine, and that's a cool thing about what he's doing. I'm really looking forward to seeing how they do. I don't think it's a match that's going to steal the show or anything like that, but I'm looking forward to seeing how both guys are positioned on Sunday. If this is kind of going to be kind of a one and done, if they're going to keep this, I would think they're going to keep this feud going for a little bit. But they've also kind of planted the seed for Big Show and Cass, and with SummerSlam approaching, you kind of have to wonder if they're going to move in that direction. So I'm not quite sure, but looking forward to seeing this on the Great Balls of Fire card on Sunday. Of course, you can join me for live coverage of that. We'll talk more about that a little bit later, but be sure to join me for live coverage of Great Balls of Fire on Sunday, beginning with the needlessly long one-hour kickoff show. Then we went to Sasha Banks and Bayley. They were shown making their entrance for a tag match, and they went to a commercial. When they came back, that tag match ended up being Sasha Banks essentially in a handicap situation, but Bayley was technically her partner, and they defeated Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax in 10-10. They had Nia. Well, so Bayley was she started the match, and then she was on the apron when Nia Jax was knocked over, I think, through the ropes, and she landed on her feet. And she climbed up back on the apron, and Bayley was like trying to be the good sport about it and go around the other side of the ring post to avoid her. Jax ended up shoving her off the apron and into the barricade. And then she delivered a running knee to the head of Bayley, and Bayley was down heading into the break. And when they came back, Bayley had been taken backstage, and they showed some footage of that. And so Sasha's kind of left out there again in a handicap type situation. And I thought they did a nice job with this. Nia looked strong because of what she did to Bayley, and she just wasn't able to. Sasha did something to kind of take her out, that put her out just long enough for Sasha to apply the bank statement on Alexa and get the win that way. So Sasha has some momentum, winning, in a 2-on-1 situation, forcing the women's champion to submit to her finisher and avoiding Nia Jax. And so this was, I thought, the whole thing, Sasha and Alexa feels a little bit rushed, but I thought they did a good job with it, building up to that big gauntlet match that they had last week. This wasn't like a red-hot follow-up to that or anything, but at the same time, they did give her some momentum going into that match on Sunday. So I wouldn't call it the best of the pay-per-view hype that they delivered for individual matches, but I thought it was still a pretty good job. Kurt Angle is back in worry mode. You could tell they weren't really having him say too much. It doesn't seem like they're ready to tell us what the hell is going on with this whole thing that Corey Graves started, where Kurt's got to worry about his reputation and all of these things, but he's back being concerned, talking to people on the phone about it. But Braun Strowman entered the room, and Angle ended whatever conversation he was having on the phone. And Strowman said he didn't think that Roman Reigns was going to be able to compete at the pay-per-view, but he still wanted competition. Angle said that he would. He wasn't there at this show, but he would compete on Sunday. Strowman kind of disputed this, saying he felt his body go limp, and he wasn't at Raw, and he's not going to be there Sunday. Still wants that competition, and Angle assured Strowman that Reigns would be there. So they wanted to make that very clear that, yes, he's going to be at the pay-per-view on Sunday. He said he had a lot of guys booked, and then he also said, Angle did, that no one really wanted to face Strowman this close to the pay-per-view, and Strowman said he was going to go to the ring in search of competition before the end of the night. So nice little hook. Tune in to, stay tuned to kind of see what kind of carnage Braun Strowman is going to unleash this week, or, would Roman Reigns show up? They didn't really play up that mystery. They just kind of made it seem like Roman wasn't there. He did show up. More on that later. Michael Cole ended up hyping a Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe interview, just saying that they would join us for an exclusive interview. So they really never, they were kind of being coy. It's like they didn't want to tell you that they weren't going to be out there in the ring. I was kind of worried this was just going to be kind of a throwaway pre-taped interview, and maybe that's why they were kind of being as vague as they were about the whole thing. But it turned out okay. We'll certainly be talking about that here in a little bit. Plenty of hype on this show in the form of SmackDown ads for the return of John Cena on Tuesday SmackDown, labeling him a free agent. So we'll find out tomorrow what that's all about, or I guess by the time you guys hear this, later today. Then we got a video package that set up the Lesnar and Joe match. They're really doing a great job with the video package they've had on these, leading into Lesnar versus Joe. Then Cole ended up saying that both men would appear live on Raw, so we found that out. But they went to a commercial break, and then second match, it's the Cruiserweights, and it shouldn't feel that way, but it does. It's unfortunate that creatively they just don't seem to have anything for these guys. They're really not putting forth much of an effort. And here we go again. It was Cedric Alexander. He's said how many times that he's done with Noam Dar and Alicia Fox, even addressed that, saying he's embarrassed about having to proclaim that. Dar came out and Cedric told him he was going to send him backstage with a neck brace that matches his girlfriend's, that being Alicia. And Fox actually came out. She was wearing a neck brace, got in Alexander's face. Long story short on this one is Cedric was able to kind of shrug off her distractions long enough to win with a lumbar check. So Cedric goes over. This feud may never end because we've felt like this thing was over in the past, and they just keep going back to it. And at one time, I was like, yeah, this is a fun program. And as I wrote in my review on Monday night, I'm kind of fearful of what comes next for these guys. So it's like, on one hand, yeah, believe me, I'm tired of this feud. I'm ready for both guys to move on to other things. But look at what they're doing on 205 Live right now. What would those other things be? Beating Tony Nese, if you're Cedric? Maybe beating Drew Gulak, beating Ari Daivari, and then trading wins with everybody else. I mean, that just seems to be what happens right now on 205 Live, and has been for quite some time. I mean, Cedric, I think, will eventually get into the title picture with Neville. Dar's been an entertaining act, but I just don't feel like they're really putting or giving any real creative effort here. It's too bad. These guys deserve better. The broadcast team played up all the media attention that the Ball family garnered for them last week by appearing on Miz TV. Well, not all of it. They did say that he said Miz TV with the Miz addressing last week's controversy would be coming up next. It was not that controversy of the son dropping N-bombs on the show. They just kind of pretended like that never happened. I guess I'm not surprised. But the Miz TV segment was Miz, Maurice, Curtis Axel, Bo Dallas all out there. Miz ended up boasting about, he was kind of putting down the Ball family for being overexposed, overhyped, and soon to be forgotten, but he was kind of taking credit for it being this smash rating success. And then he had a jab at the Phoenix crowd, saying that, first he said Lonzo Ball is going to be the biggest bust in NBA draft history, and you could hear some fans cheering that. The rival Phoenix Suns, I'm sure, would love nothing more than to see someone from the Lakers flame out. But then he told them that that Ball, Lonzo, that is, the draft pick, is going to let down more fans than Steve Nash ever did. And Nash is a longtime and favorite Phoenix Sun player, maybe one of the most identifiable members of the Phoenix Suns. I'm not an NBA guy, but I certainly know Steve Nash played for the Suns. But Arizona, the fans booed that one. The Arizona fans did. And then we went to Miz talking about Dean Ambrose. It was a few weeks back that he really laid into Ambrose in a backstage promo on Raw, and he kind of went back in that mode here, just kind of laying into him about wasted potential, and everyone thought he was going to be the next Roddy Piper, and he said, we get the wacky Ambrose, who would rather tell a joke than the real truth. And the first time around, it was like, man, he's really hitting him hard on some things. This time around, it kind of felt like it was Miz playing into some of the online criticisms of Ambrose, because I know, I for one, and I'm certainly not alone in this, have said that Dean is an entertaining babyface. There's too many times where it gets a little bit too cute, and it's just, hey, he can be fun, and he's certainly successful, the act is, but there are times when, you get the giant cowboy hat, and there's just some times where you're kind of rolling your eyes a little bit at the character, where if he maintained a little bit more of an edge, I think it would be good for him, and the same people who like him now would continue to like him, and maybe he'd kind of win over some people who roll their eyes at some of the antics. But the big thing is waiting for this guy to eventually turn heel, and I think that's where the whole Roddy Piper thing comes into play, is people who remember him as John Moxley know just how good of a promo this guy can be, and after all these years later, he's even better. And so it's just like we're kind of anxious to see this guy finally turn heel. And so I think that's where some of that comes from, the whole Roddy Piper comparison. But and Miz ended up saying that Ambrose kind of caves under pressure whenever he was a top dog. Miz said he flourishes in those situations, unlike Ambrose. And he said that Ambrose will end up being the biggest joke of them all. Ambrose ended up coming out, and he said that he was hoping we wouldn't see another Miz TV segment following that train wreck from last week. He teased going to the ring. He also said he wanted an immediate Intercontinental title match. He wanted his rematch. And well, that led to Heath Slater and Rhino, of all people, coming out. Slater said he's the last person to beat Miz, and he never got a shot for the Intercontinental Championship or any other title, and he's been in the company for 8 years. And he said he's earned this title shot for the kids, his kids, that is. And then Ambrose told Slater to wait his turn. Well, long story short on this, Kurt Angle ended up coming out in response to Miz saying that he wasn't defending the title or doing anything on this show. He was dressed in like summer white attire, I guess, or something, and he was claiming that he and Maryse were off to an Independence Day party that started at midnight, so he wasn't going to wrestle on the show. And that's when Angle came out and said he decides when and where Miz competes. And Miz told him to go talk with Corey Graves about his personal problems and stay out of his business. And Angle told him to watch his mouth and miss it, or what? And that's when he boasted again about being a big ratings draw and questioning what Angle would do. Miz ended up saying he would do Angle a favor and defend his title at the pay-per-view. And all Angle had to do was say whether he would face Slater or Ambrose. Angle ended up booking Miz in an immediate Intercontinental title match against Slater and said that Ambrose would get the title shot against the winner at the pay-per-view. So yes, brace yourself. Another Miz and Dean Ambrose Intercontinental title match. This feud may never end. Not that it's been all bad. It's just kind of like, can we move on to something new, please? Something a little bit different. And I'm sorry, but adding Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas to Miz's entourage just isn't enough for me anyway to make this thing feel fresh. But in this case, he did face Heath Slater. He beat him in 13:45 to retain the IC title. They gave Slater, Miz gave Slater some hope spots and things, and it was an entertaining match. It just was hard to buy into the idea of Heath Slater winning the championship, especially knowing that they just set up Dean Ambrose as the challenger for Sunday. It's like, well, gee, what do you think we're going to get? The 8,000th Miz and Ambrose match, or just two baby faces going at it? Yeah, of course they're going to go with Miz and Ambrose again. But Miz ended up splitting those white pants. Nothing was exposed. They talked about it being a wardrobe malfunction. But Miz ended up getting the win after Slater had gotten a couple of near falls, but Axel hit Rhino from behind at ringside. This distracted Heath, and then Miz hit the skull-crushing finale and got the win that way. And then afterward, the heels worked over Slater. Ambrose ran in for the save, but Axel and Dallas cut him off and ended up setting him up for Miz's skull-crushing finale. And then we got the makeup kiss. Miz and Maryse finally kissed afterwards, so looks like their recent issues are behind them, at least for now. We'll see if that resurfaces or if they're just kind of moving on. I don't know how much more they were really going to do with that. It just kind of seemed like it was a temporary thing, and now the issues over the grandfather clock gift being destroyed and all that appear to be at least temporarily resolved. Then from there, we went to Michael Cole hyping Brock Lesnar and Joe sitting down for an exclusive interview. They narrated some highlights from last week. They set up a Gold Dust Shattered Truth thing for after the break, and when they came back from a commercial, we got Titus O'Neil telling Apollo Crews that Braun Strowman's looking for competition. He said, you know, I would go out there myself, but this is actually the perfect opportunity for you. Crews, of course, was not exactly open to this, and just, you know, just had a daughter. And that's when Titus kind of used that to hype him up, saying, imagine, you know, your daughter asking you to tell you about when you beat Braun Strowman, or what it was like to beat Strowman, I think it was. And Crews bought in. He was sold, and then they started both chanting simultaneously, Crews can't lose. Then it was, and I don't know, I'm just still not, this whole Titus brand, or Titus, what are they calling it now? The Titus Worldwide. None of it's really doing a damn thing for me. I kind of, you know, the idea of him being with Akira Tozawa going into that Cruiserweight Championship match. Look, I mean, I've said they need to do something creatively with the Cruiserweights. I don't really see how adding Titus O'Neil, just kind of forcing him into the picture with Akira Tozawa, is really helping anyone. But Goldust sat in a director's chair in the middle of the ring, and basically he set up a video that kind of showed what he did to R-Truth the week before. And then Truth ended up standing behind him after the video played on the big screen and attacked him, and Goldust escaped. And so I don't know if they've officially announced this for the pay-per-view. I think they have, actually. So I think this is another one. You know, hey, they've, say what you will, but they've managed to, they dedicated a lot of time to building up kind of an undercard program. And I'm still, you know, enjoying that we're seeing old school Goldust back. I don't know how long it's going to last. I hope beyond a program with Truth, but I don't know. But I'm enjoying it for what it is. Angle was checking out his phone backstage again. Sheamus and Cesaro showed up, and he proposed a 30-minute Iron Man match between them and the Hardys at the pay-per-view. And I thought the heels were going to be like, no, you know, trying to find a way out of this. No, they like this idea. I don't know why Angle is running it by them, other, you know, rather than just informing them. But so that was a little bit odd. But Cesaro asked for competition. I was like, man, Cesaro and Strowman. Well, Angle had that thought too. He mentioned Strowman, but Cesaro said no. He wanted Finn Balor. And then Angle got a phone call and told Sheamus and Cesaro to be careful what they wish for, I guess in reference to, I don't think it was just, I think he would have just said it to Cesaro if it was regarding just Balor. So I'm guessing the 30-minute Iron Man match, the 30-man, yeah, it's an Iron Man tag match at the pay-per-view that they're having. It's, you know, this feud is definitely dragging on. And I'm okay with it because I'm enjoying the program right now. I guess the issue I have with it, I don't really see any other tag teams being built up. So you would think that this is going to have to end sometime. And who is going to step in and feud with, well, if the Hardys regain the titles, who's going to be their, who are going to be their challengers? And what, Gallows and Anderson, who they've already beaten, and everyone seems like they've beaten, sadly. And then on the flip side, you know, Sheamus and Cesaro retain. And you know, whenever this feud ends, who do they feud with? They're just, that's the kind of, it feels like they need to be kind of thinking ahead more than they are. But right now, they just seem like, yeah, we can get another month out of the Hardys and Sheamus and Cesaro. And it's, they're entertaining matches, but they need to plan ahead because I don't know how much life this is going to have left. You know, maybe if they get the Broken Universe, that will kind of change things. That could freshen things up. But even then, still, I mean, why can't you have more than two teams that you're focusing on, at least at some degree, you know, to some degree where you're building up one of the undercard teams for ideally more than one even, and just doing something to make it seem like you actually have a solid tag division rather than just two teams feuding all the time. In the fourth match tonight, it was Seth Rollins beating Curt Hawkins. He did it in 9 seconds. The pre-match mic work from Hawkins was similar to what he did the week before. Rollins cut him off. At the end, he just ended up hitting his, well, he punched him and then hit that big knee finisher that I don't think he's named yet, and he got the win in 9 seconds. And then afterward, he took the mic and delivered a promo. I've liked some of the mic work that's led up to Rollins and Bray Wyatt. I remember praising it a couple of weeks ago. This was not a good night for them. I didn't really think Rollins had a very good promo, just kind of going over some of the things he'd already said before, that you know, and responding to Bray a little bit, that, you know, Bray saying there's going to be a cleansing of the pay-per-view, but he said it's going to be Wyatt's mystique that'll be cleansed when he proves he's not a god. Then he said that Rollins said the only question will be if Wyatt is a man or a coward. And it wasn't that strong of a line, yet he dropped the mic. Like, he just said something like, you know, like Enzo's best line or something. Like, Enzo, you can see dropping the mic after a hot line. This was not one of those. And I even wrote, like, I hope this wasn't the last bit of hype for this match. Then I saw what they did with Bray. I kind of wish it would have been. Oof. We got another teaser for Joe and Lesnar segment. Then Michael Cole could kind of be heard. You could tell he was being heard over the house mic when they came back from the break. He introduced Joe and Lesnar. Lesnar had Heyman with him, and they did a split screen bit. So they're in different parts of the building, is the idea. Joe is like, Joe has been so calm, and I really like that Joe when he just calmly states his violent intentions. That's the best Joe for me. But this was a case where he was yelling, and I'm like, uh-oh. Or, you know, we're getting that Joe. But it really worked because the idea was that Joe's just champing at the bit to get his hands on Brock Lesnar. He wanted to do it on this show. Brock is kind of playing the cocky champion. And if the roles were reversed and Joe was the babyface, I would really, I think this would be working really well, but it's not like that. It's a little bit of a different dynamic, but I did come away from this feeling like, all right, Brock is being so cocky that this is going to be more than just, Brock Lesnar squashes Samoa Joe. This is going to be more than just, well, we're taking Joe on a ride to Suplex City and it's over and done in a couple of minutes. I think Joe is actually going to get his. He's going to get some offense in as well. I don't think he's going to win, but I think they're really, they're setting this up where I think a lot of people are going to be really disappointed if it is just a lopsided affair. So I don't see it going that way. I wouldn't be surprised if Lesnar's, grinning at one point in the pay-per-view and Joe knocks a smile off his face, something like that, where I think they're going to want to show that, yeah, Joe pushed this guy. Joe is that good. Brock might be better, but boy, did Joe give him, put up a hell of a fight. I'm guessing that's kind of the story that's going to be told here. But as far as this segment goes, Joe, so he's yelling, he's all fired up. Lesnar's all cocky, and Joe said he was going to go find Lesnar. Took off the mic and headed off to track him down, and Brock is just kind of laughing and come find me, Joe, come find me. And Adam Pearce and Jamie Noble tried to stop him, producers of the show, agents, if you will. Angle and a bunch of security guards, including one guy, one security guard who was making this like comically mean face. Go back and watch. He's kind of in the middle of the security, kind of close to. I think it was. And I think he was on Angle's right, if I remember, but I was kind of cracking up just seeing this guy. But anyway, Joe found the room, and Lesnar and Heyman were they were located in, and he wanted to get in there. Security was able to stop him. Lesnar remaining calm, still kind of smirking at Joe and just kind of laughing it all off, and said, ah, come on, Joe. Joe yelled that he was going to put Lesnar down. So I like, that Joe. He's fired up. He's just, he can't wait to get his hands on Brock Lesnar. I think they wanted to show that he's not intimidated by Brock. He can't wait to get in there. They also are showing you that, this is Brock. He's athletically arrogant and for good reason. And he is, I don't think they wanted to show you that he's taking Joe lightly. Not at all. I didn't take that away from it. It was different than I expected, just because, like I say, we've seen calm and cool Joe, and we've seen Joe taking out Paul Heyman with the coquina clutch and kicking Brock Lesnar a couple of times in those pull-aparts, and I thought, yeah, might see the roles reversed, where Lesnar's kind of the guy who can't wait to get his hands on Joe. He's the one chomping at the bit to get at Joe, and instead, no, it was a little bit of a different build, but effective, and I'm really, and I think the whole build to this has been, and I'm really looking forward to Sunday, just to seeing Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar finally have that match. It should be a good time. We went to another ad for Cena returning on SmackDown. We got ring entrances for a non-title cruiserweight match, and they went to a break. And when they came back, that cruiserweight match was Neville defeating Mustafa Ali in a non-title match. This was, and he did so in about 6:20. Mustafa Ali is a really good opponent for Lesnar, or I'm for Lesnar, for Neville. When they've worked together, and this match is certainly, Mustafa Ali gets some great hope spots in it, some really good near falls, pushes Neville to the limit, and then makes, just sells Neville's offense in a really, convincing way. Neville just destroys him with some things, and Mustafa Ali is pretty talented. He can bump all over and take some pretty wild moves and things, and so they work really well together. I don't know why we always get Mustafa Ali in the, when if he does meet Neville, it's in like a non-title match. I'd like to see Mustafa Ali actually built up at some point as a, credible challenger. I'd like to see some of these matches on pay-per-view, or just in, real title matches, rather than just kind of, well, Neville's going to win this match. Because they, even in, just in a non-title match, they do a good job of making the live crowds kind of buy into some of these near falls. So hopefully Mustafa's a guy that they want to do something with, but Neville wins here, non-title, Rings of Saturn. And then, before commercial break, they did a good job of questioning, whether it would be Apollo Crews or someone else who's going to step up and accept the challenge of Braun Strowman, who was looking for competition. And then we saw a shot in the desert. And as soon as we did, I'm like, all right, I don't think this is a new wrestler. Is this Bray Wyatt? And it was. And I was like, well, let's see. Could be good. They went to a commercial break. And when they came back, Bray was in the desert, and he talked about when people began worshiping the sun, and the sun was a merciless, sadistic idol, and that's when he decided to take control and give mankind the gift of independence. And he just kind of goes on and on about this stuff, and at the end, he starts working in Seth Rollins a little bit, and he said that he's Bray Wyatt, he's everywhere, and he called out and asked if Rollins could hear him, and he said Rollins will look into the eyes of a god, and he said Rollins will won't go blind. He said Rollins will see for the first time, and he will burn. Like, if this were Bray Wyatt's kind of introductory vignette, just kind of the first three quarters of it, okay, it's kind of. It's not your usual Bray Wyatt in the dark kind of a thing, but it's which I think were pretty effective when they were doing those in the first place. But kind of, obviously unique setting, that sort of a thing. I just going back to what I said a couple weeks ago, things I liked about that one verbal exchange they had on Raw. They were, Bray was really playing into what Rollins said and responding to certain things. This he kind of felt like he's back in that mode where he's reciting lines. He's delivering a promo that could be said about pretty much anybody. And you just kind of scratch off Seth Rollins, and next month you put in Dean Ambrose. That's the thing I don't like about some of Bray Wyatt's promos. Now, is there a chance they have the match and that some of what he's talking about, you're going to look back and go, oh, okay, it made some sense, I guess, but we've been waiting for those kind of promos and storytelling from WWE for a long time with Bray Wyatt, and they just don't materialize. So it's hard to believe that this is going to be that time. So, disappointing final push for Rollins and Wyatt, a match that I wasn't looking forward to when they first set it up, but then they had that one good verbal exchange, and I'm like, hey, I'm kind of in on this, looking forward to seeing what they do next. And last week was nothing special, and I thought this week on the Go Home show, they went the wrong way. I can't say I'm really looking forward to that match now. And not that I was, just really anxious to see it 2 weeks ago, but still, it was like unexpectedly good as far as that verbal exchange, and we're kind of right back to both guys doing their usual here this week, which isn't as great, as gifted as Bray Wyatt is as a talker. It's just there's something about these promos that just, like I said, feel generic. Like he could be talking about anyone. They went backstage where Charlie Caruso asked Alexa Bliss if what happened in her match was foreshadowing what might happen in her match with Sasha Banks on Sunday. Bliss said she basically was implying that she lost the match intentionally to give Banks a false sense of security. And Charlie says that she didn't think anybody really believes that she let Banks win. And Alexa said that no one cares what she thinks, and that's why Caruso holds a mic, whereas she's the Raw Women's Champion. So, I mean, it was fine. I don't know that it really got me fired up about seeing the match or anything, but Alexa's a good talker, and I kind of got a kick out of that, to her planting that seed that she took the loss just to give Sasha a false sense of security. But then ended up a little more hype for the next match. When they came back from a commercial break, we got Finn Balor beating Cesaro in 15 minutes. The Hardy sat in on commentary. Sheamus was at ringside. Long story short, on this one, Elias Sampson came out and was strumming his guitar. I think were they having some issues getting the guitar to go over the because it seemed like the crowd was reacting to Samson coming out, and it seemed like Balor was pointing at Cesaro and waiting for him to get up for an awkwardly long time. Like he was kind of waiting for Samson to strum the guitar, and I just wonder if like they were having some technical issue where Samson, I don't think Samson would have been necessarily late strumming the guitar, could have been, but it almost seemed like, yeah, there might have been some kind of technical issue where they just weren't getting the guitar to play over the house mic or however that works. But once he did, he distracted. He still managed to get. Finn Balor still managed to come back and win the match, but you ended up he hit the coup de grace finisher on Cesaro and pinned him. But still, I thought there was good hype here. They're clearly doing more with Elias Sampson and Finn Balor, and then we already know the Hardys challenging Cesaro and Sheamus for the in the Iron Man match for the tag titles on Sunday. So you gave people a good match with Balor and Cesaro, and then you managed to hype a couple of matches in the process. So this was fine, especially this late in the show. We got a little broadcast team hype for the pay-per-view matches, and then Braun Strowman was shown walking backstage, and the broadcast team questioned if anyone would answer his call for competition, and they went to a break. An ambulance backed into the arena and parked near the stage, and then Braun headed to the ring and talked about how he enjoys few things in life more than hurting Roman Reigns, and he said that he's too stubborn to stay down, so he keeps getting up And he keeps knocking Roman down. Strowman said that he's nearly put Reigns through the ambulance, and he still thinks he can step to him. Strowman said that if Angle is right and Reigns actually shows up at Great Balls of Fire, he's going to leave the same way he did last week, in the back of an ambulance. And I kept waiting for, all right, Reigns is going to answer the challenge. Wasn't sure exactly how they were going to do this, but it was like, Reigns has got to be there. What happened here was you had Titus O'Neil come out, and this led to him introducing Apollo Crews. So you got the match, and it was Braun destroying Crews in 4:35. I mean, Crews got a couple of moments in, but there was a, you know, just about the time it looked like he was on a roll, he'd connected with like four kicks. He went for a standing moonsault, and as he's in midair, Strowman kicked him, and it looked awesome. He just went flying across the ring. Strowman had a chance to pin Crews a couple of times, picked him up a couple of times, eventually put him away with a power slam. The whole time Booker T starts like calling on Titus to, you know, why isn't he doing something? And all I could think of is, I don't want to think about Titus right now. Let's just keep the focus on Braun Strowman. I don't know who's into this Titus O'Neil thing that, you know, here he is in the final segment on Raw. He's in the Cruiserweight thing. I don't really find any enjoyment in what they're doing with Titus O'Neil. Maybe as like an undercard bit, and that's about it. Even when it was like he was doing with Kalisto and Apollo Crews, it was still like, get this off my TV. So I don't know that it was, even clicking as an undercard thing, but it seems like this was Crews being fed to Strowman, yes, but it seems like somebody's into this whole Titus O'Neil bit a lot more than I am. But after the match, Strowman brought Crews over to the ambulance, and he ended up putting him inside the ambulance. And Titus did get involved in this, and Strowman ended up power slamming him too. But then it was after that that he brought Crews over to the ambulance and ended up tossing him in the back, and then he slapped the back of the ambulance a couple of times, which usually is when the ambulance drives away. Well, first time, ambulance didn't do anything. So he did it again. This time the siren went off. So I think, you know, the idea was that, okay, now it's going to go. But it didn't leave. He slapped it a third time. The siren just turned off. And now Strowman's getting ticked. And he goes over to kind of figure out what the hell's going on inside. And he looks inside the driver's door. And that's when Roman Reigns emerged and hit him with a big punch. Landed a couple punches. Strowman came back, tossed Reigns onto the stage. Strowman went to the stage, ended up eating a couple of punches from Roman. Strowman fought back. Reigns ran him into the video screen, and then Reigns speared Strowman off the stage and onto a table that had some boxes set up on top of it, and then Angle and some referees came out and checked on both guys. Strowman was able to get back to his feet and was leaning against the ambulance, while at the same time Reigns was kneeling on the stage. And so they were really putting over that they couldn't believe Strowman got up from this. And Cole was questioning how Reigns could come back against Strowman at Great Balls of Fire. And that's how they closed this show. A good angle. It was a nice rebound moment for Roman Reigns, who, you know, was last seen being driven away in the ambulance after being thrown into the side of it. He got just a small measure of revenge, while at the same time, Braun Strowman wasn't. They've been very good about the last time these two were building up to a feud or building up to a match. They never had Strowman just look bad. He would stand tall in most of their exchanges, and then even if it was kind of Roman's, you know, one week to get slightly the better of him, Strowman still, you know, would they wouldn't just have him laid out completely or put through a table or something. Like, I mean, he was put through a table here, don't get me wrong, but he still, you know, they were quick to show you that he got back up. And they're really good about doing that with Braun Strowman. And so it feels like Roman has a challenge. You know, it makes Braun Strowman look semi-invincible, that he's able to just, you know, get right back up from something like that. And it's rare that you feel like the Roman Reigns character has a challenge, but he does in Braun Strowman. And so that's why I say the build for this has been effective. The push for Joe and Lesnar, very effective. And I think this is going to be a fun pay-per-view on Sunday. I'm really looking forward to it. I was surprised we didn't get some mention, and they can always cover this after the fact. I thought they might tell us that this ambulance match is going to be for number one contendership. Right now, it just seems like no matter what Roman does on Sunday, he's going to SummerSlam as the number one contender for the Universal Championship. But like I say, if all of a sudden Strowman were to beat him on Sunday, well, then Strowman could turn around and make his case on Monday. It's not like they've ever shown Kurt Angle officially endorsing that, yes, Roman Reigns is going to challenge the Universal Champion at SummerSlam, at least that I recall. So they could still change it if they want to, but interesting scenario. I think we're going to learn a lot about SummerSlam, especially obviously on the Raw side of things, on Sunday coming out of the Great Balls of Fire show, and it should be a good one. And of course, again, you can join me for live coverage of that. And I should point out that .NET members will hear the exclusive audio review that Jake Barnett and I will get together and record on Sunday evening. Over this weekend, my God, the members got a lot of audio content. The members heard my Slammiversary audio review coming out of that show on Sunday evening. The members heard my audio reviews of the New Japan G1 Special in the USA, Nights 1 and 2, those available exclusively for members. Hayden Gleed, you guys heard it on the All Access side on Monday. He is in the process of reviewing the Progress Wrestling 16-man tournament. And you guys got the first one on the all-access side. There's still two more to come that the members will have exclusive access to. If you enjoy this show, the all-access full-length review of WWE Raw, know that members hear it each and every week. So you guys get it occasionally here on the all-access side. The members hear my full-length review of Raw, my full-length review of SmackDown, Zach Zimmerman's NXT review, Hayden Gleed's Ring of Honor television review, John Moore's 205 Live review, and John Moore's Lucha Underground review. Just a ton of audio content, and that's just covering the television shows. As I mentioned, all of the major pay-per-views covered in audio form again this Sunday for the Great Balls of Fire show. Jake Barnett and I will be getting together for that. The members' Q&A will be coming up later this week. Normally it's on Monday, just got pushed back this week due to the holiday week and everything that's been going on with this crazy weekend in wrestling. Really proud of the coverage that we had on ProWrestling.net, both on the site and in members' audio, and we would love for you to check it out. If you're interested, visit the main page of ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area. Once you're there, you're going to find three different pricing options that will gain you ad-free access to ProWrestling.net and our entire 9-plus year history of audio updates. $7.50 will get you in the door for 1 month, but you can save some money by signing up for either 6-month or the annual option. The annual option brings that price down $2 per month to $5.50 on average. If you have any questions, as always, hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet, or feel free to email me directly, dotnetjason@gmail.com. That's dotnetjason@gmail.com. Well, that will do it for now, everyone. Be sure to have a very fun and a very safe Independence Day. Until next time, take care.